Welcome to the Curious Advantage podcast, an exploration of the idea of curiosity and its increasing importance for thriving in the digital age from the authors of The Curious Advantage.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Curious Advantage podcast, our last episode for 2020. This series is about how individuals and organizations use the power of curiosity to drive success in their lives and businesses, especially in the context of our new digital reality. It brings to life the latest understanding from neuroscience, anthropology, history, business, and behaviorism about curiosity, and makes these useful for everyone. My name is Simon Brown. I'm one of the co-authors of the book, The Curious Advantage, and the Chief Learning Officer at Novartis. And today I'm here with my co-authors, Paul Ashcroft.
Hello.
And Garrick Jones.
Hi.
So welcome to this episode of The Curious Advantage podcast.
What a year it's been. I mean, we've been wanting to spend some time together and reflect on what we've done since the book was published in July. And we wanted to take this opportunity to also think about some of the things we've learned and what's coming down the line. We also had a great promotion where people were asked to send questions for this podcast and they'll get a book if we use their question. And we're going to answer those questions as best we can within the context of The Curious Advantage and all we've learned. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Here's one thing I've learned, Garrick, to start us off, is that it's actually possible to publish a book in lockdown in the middle of a year that has been, of course, all about COVID, and to launch a book completely virtually, which has been, you know, we haven't seen each other all year.
I remember when lockdown happened, we were talking to each other, well, what does this mean for the publication of the book? And then the decision was made, well, let's just continue rolling out the podcasts. That came first. So that was the wrong way around. And then the digital book was published. And that was normally comes after the hardback book. And then the hardback book came out and it all went very smoothly. And I have to say all the promotion that's been done online and through the podcasts and through LinkedIn and all the other webinars and conferences we've been invited to talk at this year, it's all been great, really fun process. And we're only 4.5 months in, really, coming up for 5. It's kind of astonishing, isn't it?
It is. And actually, I'd like to take the opportunity, probably on behalf of all of us, to thank all of our listeners over the course of this year and also everyone who's bought a book and supported us over this year. I think we're over 10,000 podcast listeners now and many thousand books sold. So a massive thank you to everyone out there who's supported us through a challenging year for everyone.
Can we ask everybody to put in a review in Amazon if they can?
The podcasts have been amazing. Let's talk about some of our personal favourites for a moment. What have been one of your personal favourites, Simon?
Quite a few different ones for me. Loved all of them, and not being involved in everyone either, I've had the pleasure of listening in then to some of them that I've not even been able to join. I think some of the memorable moments for me, there was the discussion with Chris Meyer, where he talked about the value of curiosity in the context of a Big Mac. A Big Mac and an anthill. He talked about how ants would come out from an anthill to find the source of food. They would discover a Big Mac sat on the ground and they would build this line to go to and fro from the Big Mac. That was their source of food. But then one day the rain would come and the Big Mac would wash away and the ants would go back and find their source of food missing. And he likened it, if I recall correctly, to how companies find their source of income, which would be the Big Mac, and they build everything around how to get that source of income and get it back to the company. But one day that source of income dries up, the Big Mac washes away. And if they've been curious, then they've been also out exploring, looking for other sources of income, other sources of food. If they haven't been curious, then actually when the Big Mac washes away, maybe they just keep going back to the same spot and wondering why there's no food there. Yeah. And for me, that was a really nice story for sort of showing how being curious and going off and exploring so it opens up all sorts of other opportunities
and has value in the business. I mean, we've learned a lot about how we can think about value and measuring curiosity in the businesses and how it impacts not only everyday lives of people who are working, but also how it has a huge strategic impact. And we can talk about that in a minute. The thing that I remember, I mean, there's so many great podcasts. The one I really liked was one with Jennifer Higge on curation and editing. And when Jennifer talked about not only what she's learned from being a waitress, you know, it's like never go empty-handed back to the kitchen, which was just, you know, make every moment count. But she said something which really stuck with me, which was always be restless with the truth. And the idea of being curious is being restless with the truth, is when you hear perceived wisdom or you hear perceived truths, be restless with that and ask yourself, where does this come from and what's it about and what's underneath this and what does it really mean? I won't forget that. Be restless with the truth.
Brilliant conversations with amazing people this year. You know, we spoke to Susie Collier all about curiosity and nurturing curiosity in children. And she's certainly an expert in that. Had a lovely conversation with her. How Isabel Garvey has been turning around Abbey Road Studios and shifting them into a digital world. I think one of my favorite, because it's a personal one, I suppose, is when we spoke to Christian Bush about serendipity. He was talking about how you not just you make your own luck, but your perception of whether you are lucky or not has a real impact in the world on whether you actually do turn out to be lucky or not. So I think there's that sort of insight from him I found really amazing.
The Isabel Garvey one, I had a very fond memory of that one with the story that she told about curiosity within the Abbey Road studios and the example that she gave around how they were recording a session with Muse, the band, and how one of the engineers was sent out to the butchers to get a set of chicken bones because they were curious as to what sound it would make if you played the drums with chicken bones. And I remember us then drawing the parallel to the business world of, you know, what's the crazy, creative, curious idea that's the equivalent of sending someone out to get chicken bones to play the drums with?
I loved learning from Stefan about how curiosity is good for our health. You know, the specific thing about how being curious actually lowers our heart rate, and also the link to the long term. You know, if you're curious and you engage with other people, communities, and ideas, it has an impact, a neuroscientific impact in the brain. And it allows us to probably deal with things like early onset of Alzheimer's and so on. Calcification of various neural pathways as well is eliminated because of curiosity and keeping engaged and stimulated in things that are outside of our comfort zone.
But the first episode with Jackie Brassey as well, where she shared about the sort of the emotional benefits of being curious and how that's helped her in meetings where she may have been feeling anxiety or whatever, but actually by applying curiosity and recognizing there isn't a single answer to things, that actually can be curious about many different outcomes and what's going on here, that actually gave her confidence in stressful situations. That was another takeaway.
I wonder if people have, certainly I've learned, and whether people have just become more curious this year by necessity. We've been stuck at home much more, trying to have to do new things. I wonder if people have just become more curious because they've in some way been pushed into doing that. And that's just been a way of getting through this year.
I think it's been a tough year on so many people that, being curious may be one of the ways people have helped. And certainly if we look at the reaction that we've seen and the engagement in so many conversations over the course of this year, it seems to have provided some positive light.
And what's really helped me as well, I have to say, is our understanding of curiosity. Not only having this amazing opportunity to meet amazing people and talk with them online, write the book with you guys, which was just such a pleasure, I have to say, from my perspective, but also just this exploration of curiosity, really coming to understand that curiosity is this attitude of wonder, but this spirit of exploration, and how that idea has fueled, I would say, my mental health in lockdown. It's been a great thing to have in the back of my mind and keep me curious and keep me open and keep me exploring.
Think back to our conversation with Lisa Bodell about how you become more curious through curious questions as well, and her killer questions, which started with the massive question of how do you kill the company, but also her guidance of, you know, how do you craft a really good question that incites curiosity, and also the I think it probably challenged my beliefs that actually the question is far more important than the answer, that if we can get good at asking the right questions and really good questions, actually that's going to be more valuable in the future, because answers will become easier through the technology and search engines and things to find. It's how do you ask a really good killer question.
Who was the person that said to us, was it in the podcast or did I read this, the computers are for answers, it's the people are for the questions?
I really like the one with Gordon Fuller from IBM, where I started to get a sense not only of what they're doing in terms of how to enable curiosity and learning within their culture, but the technical requirements for this digital age. And I just started to get a sense of, and we've learned a lot since we've spoken with him, about what the future may hold in terms of how you enable curiosity within systems and people, but what's the technical infrastructure that's needed to support that. And these are early days, of course, but that we've learned a lot about that. And that gives me a lot of geeky excitement, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I'm super impressed with what they've done using AI to support learning in terms of understanding the learning needs and being able to recommend learning to the right people at the right time and you know, get even more sophisticated in terms of the use of AI behind the scenes there. So, yeah, a definite role model on leading the way on use of AI to support learning and curiosity.
Yeah. Well, guys, shall we have a look at the questions that we've been sent?
I think we should.
Well, the first question we have is from Paul Miller. And he asked, is there a relationship between curiosity and what Zen calls beginner's mind? In particular, the opening line of Suzuki Buddhist classic Zen Mind, beginner's mind. And he says, in the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities, but in the experts, there are few. So is there a relationship between curiosity and what Zen calls beginner's mind?
A wonderful insight from Paul Miller there, because absolutely there must be some link between curiosity and the Zen mind or the open mind or the beginner's mind. One thing that we've discovered, haven't we, through writing about curiosity is the childlike wonder of approaching the world every day, looking to explore something new and approaching every day as a new experience. That is one of the secrets, I suppose, as to why children learn so fast. And then as adults, that sort of fades away. And so perhaps the Buddhist practice of keeping the beginner's mind and keeping with the beginner's mind, even though we start to become more expert, more learned, is a thing to become better at. And curiosity, as I imagine, is something that is a good way of putting that into practice for ourselves. That's where I would start. So I would say absolutely, absolutely yes.
Yeah, and I think if I recall correctly, then when you're most curious is when you're about 4 years old. And I remember we had the conversation with Stephen Bart, Chief People and Organization Officer at Novartis, around actually how it can be harder to retrain yourself to be curious if you've lost that childhood curiosity as you go. So, yeah, I think often that young mind is naturally curious. And then as we go through life, maybe we become less curious. But then there's ways to bring it back. I'm also reminded of a conversation with Dr. Diane Hamilton around the things that actually stop us from being curious as well.
Yeah.
And her fate model that she has there as well around fear, attitude, technology and environment, if I recall correctly.
And it's that thing about, she was talking about, as we move forward and we think we know things, our context becomes fixed because it provides psychological safety. And part of the problem sometimes can be we take the same way of doing things or the same way of thinking into a new situation where it's no longer appropriate. And the idea about the beginner's mind is to constantly be open to what could come and where it's going and not allow ourselves to get too fixed, which is what curiosity is all about.
Yeah, linked to not knowing the answers and being comfortable with not knowing the answers, but continuing to ask the questions and be open to the possibility. So that very much is about the beginner's mind.
I like this idea of, you know, when you do a mind map of what you know about something at the beginning of a year, and at the end of the year, you might do another mind map and you realize you know so much more. But yet, if you do it again a year later, another one, you just realize how little you knew the year before and how little you knew the year before that. It's always, you're always beginning in some respect.
So thank you, Paul Miller, for getting the conversation going with that question. Our next question comes from Brendan Strong. And Brendan's question is, I feel like your audience already have some sense of the value of curiosity in learning, development and growth. I wonder if you have ideas about how you can pass the value of curiosity onto others, especially the more cynical.
Oh, I like that. I like the idea of the especially the more cynical, because we have a very good answer for the especially the more cynical, because we think and know, and our research is showing, that there is a direct relationship between curiosity in individuals and organizations and value. And more CEOs you talk to who are embarking down the value route and the curiosity route are doing so because it has an impact on the value that is generated by groups of people and organizations. Not only, as Simon was talking about, having different options and different scenarios that allow you to have better answers, but also because it keeps things open and allows you to survive when things get tough. I also think there's a bottom line value to the organization because of curiosity, and it has direct relationship to how successful that organization is going to be, because it impacts attitudes and trust and relationships with external stakeholders. The whole ecosystem is impacted by a spirit of curiosity. So huge amounts of value being generated, and we can see that in some of the case studies like IBM, for example, Novartis, Microsoft.
You're listening to the Curious Advantage podcast, inspired by the book The Curious Advantage, written by Paul Ashcroft, Simon Brown, and Garrick Jones. Subscribe to the podcast today.
I think there's five direct traits that curiosity benefits that we talk about in the book. So there's the linkage between curiosity and increased learning, which is University of California research. There's three that were cited in the Harvard Business Review, which is the linkage between curiosity and better decision making, curiosity and better team working and team dynamics, and better communication, because you're interested in what the other person says. And then finally, research from INSEAD, which is around the link between curiosity and creativity and innovation, and how it drives greater innovation. So those are all sort of concrete research studies that have made that positive benefit from curiosity.
Did you mention the lack of the better communication, interpersonal communication, through because of curiosity? Because it means there's less conflict in the system.
More interested to understand why someone would have an opposing point of view, and by understanding that more, being curious about why they might hold that thought.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. You get that better team dynamic. Yeah.
That's right. I learned a lot from the Stephen Bayard podcast that we did with Vaz as well, where Stephen talked about the shift in language as you become a curious leader, moving away from top down. Having all the answers, or even having to have all the answers as the leader, to being a leader who asks curious questions and asks what is behind this and seeks to understand what's being brought to them and how that has an impact on the people around them. Thank you, Brendan Strong, for that question. Next question is from Kay Portia Kawamura. Kay says, curiosity is a sort of inspiration, but there is also a proverb that says, curiosity killed the cat. So glad you asked this. Where is the threshold between healthy curiosity and greedy curiosity, if such a thing exists? And let's start with curiosity killed the cat, Paul.
Yeah, so I love this question because when we first started writing this book about The Curious Advantage, of course, one of the first questions we were asked is, why would you write a book about curiosity? Didn't curiosity kill the cat? So we have to look into this. Is that actually true? And the fact of it is that I think we live in a very fortunate age that curiosity and being curious is valuable and seen as a good thing. It's not always been the case. Aristotle said once, to avoid criticism, say nothing, do nothing, be nothing. In those days, it was pretty dangerous to be a philosopher and a thinker of new ideas. Shakespeare, I think, came up with the expression, not curiosity killed the cat, but care killed the cat, which, if you know your Shakespeare, features in Much Ado About Nothing. I think what those folk are talking about is they lived in a time where being curious wasn't seen as a very positive thing. So back to the question, what's the balance between being curious and being greedy about it? I think what we've discovered is that curiosity in many ways is like a process. There's a model there in which you can be successfully curious, doing something which of course is utterly dangerous, that may hurt yourself or hurt others, is not what we would call successful curiosity. But discovering something through being creative, through making, through working with others, this is healthy, successful curiosity that's not necessarily greedy, because actually it creates more for other people whilst you're being curious. I think that's what would be my take on that one, Garrick.
Well, it reminds me also of what Bill Sherman said in his podcast with, from the Warburg Institute, which they sometimes call the home of curiosity. He said that curiosity was considered dangerous in medieval times, and certainly times where thinking was more controlled. Whereas now, the process of curiosity and being like the Warburg Institute, where you can go and research about so many different things from totally different and new perspectives, just to keep information open and keep us moving forward, that's the thing that keeps us alive. So I think we live in an era where curiosity is about life completely.
One of our early conversations with Josh Bursin, where we were talking about curiosity in organizations and how in some organizations potentially that curiosity is not encouraged and maybe not necessarily dangerous, but maybe limiting, where you know, new person comes into the organization, starts being curious, why are we doing it like that? You know, maybe there's a better way, and that they're completely shut down of no, that's how it's done around here. You know, don't question, just do. And you know, built up from maybe how things were in the past, where there was a set process and that was to be followed. And, you know, in some cases that may be justified today, but in a very ambiguous world that we see today, actually that process of questioning and being curious about better ways is in so many instances actually hugely helpful for the organization to help innovation. And I remember the conversation and the stories he was telling us from Microsoft around their growth mindset and the curiosity that they instill as a company as well.
Yeah.
The next question that we really loved was from Shivkuma Swami, who asks us, the VUCA challenges of this year demand one, agility, two, unlearn and learn new skill sets. How can you address this by building curiosity to adapt or perish?
This year has just accentuated even more the reason why curiosity and the continuous sort of building of new skills is so important. That we faced, you know, complete ambiguity with the pandemic. No one had faced this situation before, and there was very much how do we experiment and learn from what works, and learn from a wider community out there of what's working, how people are reacting, and from that finding the best ways to go, and then applying criticality into the things that we experimented with, that we tested with. I think in terms of the learning and unlearning skills as well, I mean the data is reinforcing the need for that absolutely to be the case. So we talk about a third of people having learned a new to world skill in the last 3 years. Gartner research also, they came up with that 19% of the skills that we all rely on today will be irrelevant in 3 years' time. I'm minded of the example from a survey of CIOs in 2018, where only 1% of CIOs were doing anything with blockchain. 2 years ago, really. 2020 LinkedIn skills survey, number one in demand technical skill, blockchain. Oh. So you've seen that switch in skills, you know, in the space of 2 years, from something not being on the radar to being the number one in demand skill. And so I think exactly to this question, that the need to be able to unlearn and relearn, and curiosity to power that learning, whether it's through better retention through the University of California research that we talked about earlier, or whether it's just the motivation to learn and to build those skills. So yeah, great question.
Think at the organizational level, many organizations have had a jolt in the arm to consider things that they may never have considered that they would do. So whether they are running physical events, whether they have been running town halls, getting people together to deliver work, I think every organization has been forced to radically rethink how it does business and adapt tools quicker than they ever would. I know Satya Nadella talks about earlier in the year, he said something like, we've had 2 years worth of digital transformation in 2 months. I think maybe we've had more than that in less than that time, but it's been astounding how quickly organizations have had to adapt to this fully digital world.
And when you have to pivot that fast, you only can be successful if you've got lots of curiosity and lots of thinking within the system, so you have alternatives present. But then, of course, it's all about learning. How do we upskill the new skills? How do we do that as quickly as possible? How do we do that in an effective way so everybody's engaged, so that they can move forward? I mean, it's just brought everything into focus, hasn't it?
A curious culture is a game changer. What does curiosity mean for you? Follow hashtag Curious Advantage and join the conversation.
It's a very nice segue into the next question. And thank you to Madhabi Lata for this question. Maybe it's one for you, Simon. How can you make learning a habit throughout the year instead of just for a month or a week?
I think there's a conscious piece there around actually committing time to learning and prioritising learning. And within Novartis, we have our Curiosity Month, where we have a big focus around learning over September. With this year, over 200 global webinars supporting curiosity, but it goes beyond a month. That we're encouraging people to block time to actually learn, to spend. Our aspiration is 100 hours a year of learning. And building those skills and being curious. If I look personally at how do I build in the time, I think this year my latest numbers are about 250 hours of learning for this year. And the way I've done that, blocking some time, but my diary is generally pretty horrendous. So I sometimes manage to protect that. Quite often I don't. Also finding ways to learn through a variety of means. When I was in the office pre-COVID, then I would listen to podcasts on the way in the morning, on the way back. I still listen to audiobooks. When I take my son to Taekwondo, I usually have an audio book on in the car there. And when he gets in, he tells me how boring it is and I have to turn it off. Those are ways that I learn, but also learning is more than formal learning. So a lot of the ways that I learn is through talking to others, through reading things. LinkedIn is usually a source of great inspiration, whether it's through finding great podcasts or articles or learning from others' ideas, also industry forums and things to learn from what others are doing. So I think it's not just about having to sit time taking a course. There's so many ways that we all learn, and right. It's then recognizing and appreciating that.
And there's the construction piece as well. It's like, have a project. We've learned so much just from our project around the Curious Advantage. It's opened up so many different worlds to us, not only conferences and people who are interested in things in business, but also things in neuroscience and art and anthropology and history and so on. This has all been driven, our curiosity has been driven by the fact that we had this project and we had deadlines and we wanted to get things written and we wanted to get things researched. I mean, I found that just hugely powerful. I would say get a project, and get a big project, stretch yourself, because in doing so, it's like you draw all this information and learning toward you in some way, in an easy way. It gets built into our lives in the way, just like going to the gym. You want to make it part of your everyday life, not something you do as an extra. And I love the idea of just having a project and finding these new worlds kind of coming toward me.
I saw something earlier today where it said growth and comfort can't happen at the same time. So if you're comfortable, you're not growing.
That's right.
And if you're growing, then it doesn't feel comfortable.
That's nice.
I thought this was very very interesting way of looking.
That's right. All learning is slightly painful. we talk about that in the book. We've got an Audible book coming as well, haven't we, down the line? That's coming out next year.
Indeed, early next year. Hopefully that will be out for everybody.
Yeah,
and that was a learning experience as well in itself.
So we have a couple more questions.
Yep, a question from Susan Knoller. I hope I pronounced that right, Susan. What tips do you have for developing or embedding curiosity into your change management process to improve the speed and adoption of change?
That's a good question. In terms of change management, it's interesting. I think you can't build curiosity into change management as a step on the path. I think you have to take a more holistic view of things, in that if you have a curious ecosystem, a curious culture, a curious group of people who are attempting change, you will find that change is more successful. We know that top-down change requirements are usually failures and waste of time and money. So the only way is really to encourage people. And we always said, you buy into what you build. And so the idea of construction, allowing people to be curious together, allowing people to ask the questions they need and have the conversations and be engaged with building whatever that transformation is, that, I think, is the secret to using curiosity within any system that's trying to change.
We like to use design thinking when we're working, certainly in our organization, but with other organizations. And from that, we can take the idea away from designers as they are infinitely curious. Why artists are annoying is that they are deliberately difficult, and they like to bring controversial ideas and new ideas in. So the lovely thing about working with a design-based process is that it constantly allows you to challenge your thinking and others' thinking as you go through. But as Garrick says, you build and iterate things together. So we make real stuff. And I think that would be probably my learning on working in sort of change management is, as you work through cycles of change, make some real concrete deliverable, make a show, tell people about it, use it, then draw a line under it, learn from it, and then make the next version or the next service or the next product. That's what we've learned from using the design process as part of being curious and doing change management.
So thank you, Susan, for that question. And then our final question comes from Megan Kelton. And Megan asks, I know this is on your radar, but I am anxious to hear more about measuring curiosity.
Oh, good question. We are very interested in measuring curiosity and understanding the impact of curiosity within a system, organization, and so on. And understanding what are those variables? What are the things that we should be measuring? What data is already being held that is indicative of curiosity in the system? And what things should we be trying to encourage that we can measure to enable curiosity in the system? That's part of our research. And coming up, we've got a curiosity diagnostic that we're currently working on with Ashridge. We've got a great alliance with them, and we're going to be launching that diagnostic in the new year, and we're currently in that research. So it's specifically around measuring curiosity in the organization and its impact.
Great. So I think that's all of our questions. It's been quite a year. So what do we have in store for 2021?
Definitely more podcasts.
Some great podcasts coming up. There's one with Michael Bungay Stanier, who's author of the million-selling Coaching Habit and the Advice Trap books as well. A great conversation with him. We have a couple with leading academics. I'll keep their names a mystery for the moment, but from one from a US very well-known university and one from an international university. So some, I think, fascinating conversations coming there. Who else do we have?
We've got an astronaut who we're going to be speaking to. And we're also speaking with someone who really knows about context and creating symbols in developing nations to allow people to learn and how context is created through icons and so on. I mean, lots of fun stuff coming up and down the line. We've got the diagnostic. What else have we got? We've got the 7 C's for learning, an initiative that's probably coming down the line around creating the 7 C's of curiosity as a learning program. And there's also a proposal to do some AI work using AI and the 7 C's and putting that together in apps.
So it sounds like we've got another quiet year next year.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about the kind of stuff around learning in the flow of work. And I'm really excited about how curiosity plays into that and learning what that means. You know, how do we enable curiosity to be part of the everyday learning in the flow of work that Josh Burson talks about.
So thank you again and wish you all a
best of holiday season.
Happy holidays.
Thank you, gents. That's always a delight.
Thank you for listening to the Curious Advantage podcast.
The Curious Advantage book is now available to purchase on Amazon.
Stay tuned for the next episode and keep exploring curiously. Subscribe to the podcast today. Follow hashtag Curious Advantage and join the conversation. This podcast is produced by Aliki Palinelli and John McGinty and edited by Jill Damatak-Futter.